All right, secondly, we come to kshanti as tolerance. And we'll deal with this and with the following aspect of kshanti a little more quickly, a little more briefly, because we've still rather a lot of ground to cover. So first comes the illustrative story. Now, this particular story, some of you must have heard before, because we had occasion to refer to it in our series on Tibetan Buddhism. Those of you who attended that series, or part of that series, may remember that the Mongols were converted to Buddhism in the 13th century by a great spiritual master called Pagpa. Pagpa, who was of course a Tibetan, was the head at that time of the Shakyapa school, one of the four great schools of Tibetan Buddhism. You may recollect that there are the Gelugpas, the Nyingmapas, the Kagyupas, and the Shakyapas. So in the 13th century, this great spiritual teacher, this great spiritual master Pagpa, was the head of the fourth of these schools, the Shakyapa school. And he was a man of great influence, great ability, great prestige, and he was the guru, the spiritual teacher, the spiritual master of the great Kublai Khan, who you may remember Marco Polo visited. And the emperor, Kublai Khan, who of course was emperor of China as well as Khan of Mongolia, in gratitude to Pagpa for his teaching, for his instruction, gave him the secular jurisdiction over the whole of Tibet, so that he became, as it were, the ruler of Tibet. And at the same time, Kublai Khan wanted to pass a law and apply it throughout his domains, compelling all Buddhists to follow the Sakyapa teaching. Now, you may be thinking that, Pagpa must have been very pleased and very happy that there was going to be a law compelling everyone to follow the Sakyapa teaching. But no, not at all. What happened was that Pagpa dissuaded Kublai Khan from passing that law. He said to the emperor, he said, everybody should be free to follow their own conscience, to follow that form of Buddhism which they liked best. And he said, this is the ancient Buddhist teaching, the ancient Buddhist tradition. So the emperor did not pass that law. So this is an example of tolerance. And this, we may say, this tolerant attitude is the general attitude of Tibetan Buddhists. It is, in fact, the attitude of all Buddhists everywhere at all times. If there have ever been any exceptions, they have been very, very, very few indeed. There might be two or three, or at the most four of them, very minor ones, in 2,500 years of Buddhist history. And we can't help feeling in what striking contrast this all stands with the history in the West of Christianity. If one goes through the history of the Church, especially during the early and the Middle Ages, one can't really help being, I would say, revolted. Because there are so many instances of intolerance, of fanaticism, of persecution. These things seem to be the rule, not the exception at all. We only got to think, for instance, of the rather ruthless destruction of the whole pagan culture of Western Europe, the wholesale massacre of heretics like the Cathars, the Albigenses, the Waldenses. We only got to think of the sad and sorry story of the Inquisition and the Crusades and the witch burnings later on. And we've only got to recollect that all these things represented the official and the declared policy of the whole body of the Church, and that everybody, from the Pope downwards, was involved, even in some cases, some of those who are considered to be saints. And if we go through the history of the Church, and if we attend to this particular aspect of it, we can't help sometimes getting the impression of something deeply aberrant, something deeply even pathological. Some people, of course, do say that all this is an aberration. They say it doesn't represent real Christianity, and that may well be so. But one may certainly observe that there are strong traces, quite strong traces, of intolerance, even in the Gospels themselves. In fact, we may say that Christianity seems to have been intolerant right from the very beginning, and continues so in the vast majority of cases right down to the present day. The only difference being that nowadays the church has very little secular power, and therefore it can't do very much harm to its opponents. But it would seem, to go a little wider, to generalize, it would seem that intolerance, exclusiveness, and a tendency towards persecution and fanaticism, it would seem that this is characteristic of all forms of monotheism. Monotheism tends to be of this nature. Monotheistic religions do tend to be of this nature. It's not just a question of Christianity, but Judaism and Islam are also very, very intolerant. As I mentioned, I believe, the other week, if I wanted to go and preach Buddhism in a Muslim country, I mean, I just couldn't do that. If I attempted, I'd probably pay very dearly for it, because Muslims do not have this tradition of tolerance of other religions. And this would seem to be true of all the monotheistic faiths. But Buddhism, we know, is non-theistic. It doesn't believe in a personal God. It doesn't believe in a supreme being. It doesn't believe that religion consists in submission to such a supreme being, or faith in such a supreme being. According to the Buddhist teaching, each and every individual is responsible for his or her own spiritual destiny. But you can't be responsible, you can't be expected to be responsible, without freedom. And therefore, in Buddhism, everybody is encouraged to choose and to follow, in their own way, their own path. And this is why we have so many different forms of Buddhism. These different forms are not sects. They're not rival bodies. They don't all claim exclusive possession of Buddhist truth. The different schools, the different forms of Buddhism represent, we may say, particular aspects of the one total tradition. Now, though Buddhism is tolerant, not only towards all other forms of Buddhism itself, but towards all other religions, at the same time, it isn't vague and it isn't woolly. Sometimes you find that people, individuals, are tolerant, but they're very vague and they're very woolly. They mix everything up. They don't distinguish. They don't divide. They don't analyze. But Buddhism isn't like this. In Buddhism, there's no pseudo-universalism. The teaching of Buddhism is a clear teaching. It's a precise teaching. But at the same time, perfect tolerance is practiced. And this sort of thing, this sort of combination, is very, very difficult for the Western minds to understand. This combination of certainty on the one hand and tolerance on the other. We tend to think in the West that the more confident you are in the truth of what you believe, or more confident you are that you know, the greater your right to impose your views on other people. We tend to think, well, I know it's right and I know it's true. So therefore, I've got by hook or by crook to bring other people into this, and even to force them to accept. Why can't they see it? It's their blindness, it's their foolishness, it's their stupidity. This tends to be our attitude in the West. But in Buddhism, it isn't like this. Buddhists are clear in their understanding of, say, the Four Truths, the Eightfold Path, conditioned co-production, shunyata. These are a clear, precise teaching which have been well formulated intellectually, well thought out. And those who do believe them, who do accept them, believe them fully, wholeheartedly, accept them completely. They're fully convinced of their truth. But at the same time, perfect freedom is extended to other people to think differently. And the Buddhist doesn't become agitated. He doesn't become worried. He doesn't become upset at the idea, at the thought, that elsewhere in the world, even in his own environment, there are people who just don't accept what he accepts, who don't believe that the Buddha was enlightened, who don't believe that the Noble Eightfold Path leads one to nirvana, who reject all that. The Buddhist recognizes this fact. He sees it quite clearly, but he's not disturbed. He doesn't feel upset. He doesn't feel threatened. Whereas in the West, if someone doesn't share our belief, we tend to feel threatened. We tend to feel insecure. We tend to feel undermined. So this sort of fanatical desire, this fanatical insistence to make everybody believe what we believe, to propagate our faith,